Cosmoses.
Let's talk about the science of how things break.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to The Checkout. It's a podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, you know where to get them. Produced at WBGO 88.3 FM in Newark, all of our shows hosted on our homepage, on our website at checkoutjazz.org. I'm Simon Rentner. What you're listening to right now is a new Tony Allen track. Blue Note Records has plans for a posthumous Tony Allen album entitled There Is No End. It doesn't have a release date yet, but we do have this one single, Cosmosis, featuring Skepta and Ben Okiri, produced by Tony Allen, Damon Albarn, and Remy Kabaka. Let's hear a little bit of that right now.
Oh, breathe change by osmosis, change on the music of Cosmosis. Sufis sing about.
This forthcoming record on Blue Note Records, There Is No End, featuring Tony Allen, is not a jazz record. I will tell you that it's mostly featuring guest rappers and singers like Danny Brown, Sampa the Great, and many others. But on this show, we are strictly talking about Tony Allen in a jazz way. So we hope that you will stay with us. It is an awesome conversation with Michael Veal and Joe Armin Jones. Enjoy. It's been exactly 1 year since Tony Allen left us, the Nigerian legend on the drum kit, Fela Kuti's music director and the inventor behind the pulse known as Afrobeat, along with Fela. A modern sound that isn't only emblematic of his country, but maybe an entire continent, would become the soundtrack of the rise of Pan-Africanism in the late 20th century. On International Jazz Day, we wish to bring focus to Tony Allen by reflecting on his career, shining a light on one of his last recordings captured over a decade ago, but finally released last year. It's a session with the late South African trumpet icon Hugh Masekela called Rejoice. And although it did receive some critical acclaim, the album's impact was undoubtedly muted when it was released during the middle of the pandemic. Joining us to talk about all things Tony Allen is Michael Veal, a jazz musician, professor at Yale University, a foremost expert on Tony Allen, who assisted on his autobiography, Tony Allen, Master Drummer of Afrobeat. He also authored an excellent biography of Fela Kuti, Fela, the Life and Times of an African Musical Icon. Michael Veal, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Great to talk to you too.
When we think about the history of this music, especially jazz, you're a jazz musician, right?
I play several different kinds of music. I have an Afrobeat jazz band, you know, an instrumental band, a big band actually called Michael Veal and Aqua Ife. We play around the city. We played in Europe. And I play electric bass in that band, but I also play soprano saxophone, playing, you know, jazz. I wouldn't call it straight down the line mainstream jazz music, but definitely music inspired by that tradition.
When we think about the history of the music, we think of drummers. We think of obviously Papa Joe Jones. We think of Max Roach. We think
you're talking about the history of jazz.
Jazz specifically, yeah. Okay. We think about Art Blakey. We think about Elvin Jones. Mm-hmm. But rarely does the name Tony Allen come up in this lineage. But maybe that's starting to change. And I wanted to ask you, should we be thinking about Tony Allen within that specific framework?
Well, yes. I mean, Tony is one of the great drummers of his historical window, which would be 1960 to his passing in 2020. He was one of the most important figures of taking the jazz concept of drum set playing into Africa. And in doing that, he was following the footsteps of people like Guy Warren, also known as Kofi Kanaba. Kofi Kanaba, of course, had spent time in the United States jamming with Charlie Parker and Duke Ellington, and he was a friend of Max Roach, and I think he was also a friend of the Cuban conguero Chano Pozo. So Kofi Ganaba was a very important historical figure in the transatlantic conversation of drumming, and he was a little older than Tony Allen. Kofi Ganaba was playing with E.T. Mensa, who was recognized as the father of highlife music, which was a type of dance music popular in English-speaking West Africa, mainly Ghana and Nigeria. And so Tony, being a little younger, kind of came up out of that lineage. And by the time Tony came through, there were lots of drum set players across West Africa because they were inspired by jazz. And Tony is kind of the one that was able to pull ahead of the pack. He came up listening to the great jazz drummers. You know, he loved the old classic Blue Note recordings of the 50s and 60s. He loved Art Blakey. Philly Joe and Max and Elvin and Tony, you know, he was fundamentally inspired by those drummers. And what he was able to do was to take that concept of drumming and give it a more African inflection. I mean, it already had an African inflection because it's African American music, but he was able to, you know, his ears were open to all of the traditional music and the traditional drumming in particular. In that area of West Africa, from say Cameroon to Nigeria to Benin to Togo to Ghana, where you have, you know, some amazing drumming cultures, and Tony himself being half Nigerian, Yoruba on his father's side, and half Ghanaian, Ga on his mother's side, you know, those are two of the great drumming cultures of West Africa. So he soaked it all up, and it came out in his playing. Along with the R&B stuff, you know, the great drummers of the 1960s, like Clyde Stubblefield, Jabbo Starks, Ziggy Mottolist, and all those people. So that stuff was all in his drumming too.
That's what's so inspiring, but also confusing about like how to even think about Tony Allen, because he's clearly inventing this new language of music that would become Afrobeat, but he doesn't
He was inventing the drumming style of it.
Exactly.
You see, because there's all this confusion and debate going around about Tony Allen versus Fela. Afrobeat was the invention of Fela Kuti. You know, he invented the whole concept of the music. It's not true that Tony was the musical director of the band. He wasn't. You have to adjust these terms culturally. What band leader means in West Africa, it just means like an administrative role. It's like someone whose job is to make sure everyone is there on time, everyone's in tune, ready to play. You know what I mean? It's not like he was writing the music or arranging the music, because he wasn't. That all came from Fela. What he did do was invent the drumming concept for Afrobeat.
The story of Ghana's Kofi Ganaba is like one of these sort of lost histories in the annals of jazz traditions that we should be talking about and focusing on more.
Absolutely. You see, the thing about Kofi Ganaba, he made his name as a highlife drummer playing with E.T. Mensa. And so Tony, you have to understand him in that context. You know, Fela's music itself is derived from highlife. It's like a fusion of highlife and James Brown and modal jazz and some indigenous stuff. So Tony really developed his style in the context of like the highlife paradigm. You feel me? And that's almost like a big band style of playing.
Wow.
I think you kind of have to start with the Africa 70, you know, Fela and Africa 70 stuff to really understand Tony's brilliance. When he was playing with Fela's band, there was the drum set there. There was someone playing chekere. There was someone playing sticks, you know, like claps, like clave. Probably two people playing interlocking conga part. Then you had the lead conga player on top improvising, Henry Kofi. So there was a lot for him to play against and a lot for him just to sit with. So he didn't really have to fill up so much space. He could just groove and interject. And that's where you really hear his brilliance. Later, when he's playing with these smaller groups, he's got to fill up a lot more space because sometimes he's only playing with a quartet or maybe a quintet, sometimes even a duo. Like if you look at the project he did with Jeff Mills, you know? So I would say people should start with the classic recordings of Fela and Africa 70. Things like Zombie, Confusion, Question Jam Answer, Kalakuta Show, Alagbon Close. I mean, basically Tony's drumming is brilliant on all of that Africa 70 stuff. There's not a single track that I can think of where he's not totally shining.
Well, let's listen to Tony Allen actually take a drum solo in a traditional jazz sense. This is from Open and Close with Fela Kuti.
So one of Tony's big inspirations was Max Roach. And if you listen to that solo that he does on Open and Close and compare it to Max Roach's solo on Sonny Rollins, I think.
St. Thomas, I think.
You can hear how he really borrowed a lot from Max's language with Sonny.
Tony Allen is often cited specifically for his inventive use of the hi-hat.
Again, it goes back to the jazz thing because he just, you know, played his hi-hat on the 2 and 4. Now, if you're playing jazz drumming, you know, that's standard. Did you ting, 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 you know what I mean? You keep that hi-hat going on 2 and 4 in like the standard jazz drumming. You know, post bebop, let's say, Max Roach, Kenny Clark, and everyone who came after that. Of course, not everybody does it. You know, like Tony Williams, for example, he had his hi-hat going on all 4 beats. You know, he chick, you know, that was just his way of playing. But basically, that keeping that hi-hat on the 2 and 4, that's a jazz thing. And none of the highlife drummers were doing it because they were all playing what they call open snare. In other words, you're using your both of your hands on the snare drum. So it's almost like the highlife style of drumming, in a way, is almost like the old school New Orleans style of drumming. You know, so, you know, those New Orleans drummers weren't playing the hi-hat in a steady way, but the bebop drummers and everyone afterwards were. So I think Tony was inspired by those drummers. So he's not playing ting chit ting chit ting chit, but he's playing, you know, you see what I'm saying? The significance of that is not the technical complexity of what he was playing. It was that it gave his playing an equilibrium on both sides of the beat, so to speak, and allowed him to throw all that polyrhythmic stuff in there.
As it pertains to the specific drum solos that Tony Allen studied, that were jazz or Max Roach solos, maybe, did he point you to very specific recordings, and what were those?
No, he didn't, actually. Not that I can remember. He used to talk about the Blue Note recordings all the time. And, you know, we're talking about the high life era, so we're talking about the late 50s and early 60s. That's stuff like Hank Mobley, you know, Art Blakey, Horace Silver. You know what they used to call hard bop. It was that era, going up to the emergence of the Elvins and the Tonys, the first Miles Quintet, the second Miles Quintet.
I don't know about what you, if you feel this way, but when I listen to Art Blakey, and especially those classic Blue Note recordings, I actually hear Tony Allen. Like, I almost feel like they have a same kind of, I don't want to say soul, but it just feels like a warmth. The pocket is so insane in both of their playing. The insinuation of polyrhythm. I feel like they might be musical cousins or something. Is that off base?
No, I mean, look, they're both people of African descent. And in that time period, the conversation was going back and forth across the Atlantic. You know, the African musicians were listening very intensely to the African-American musicians and vice versa. You know, Art made a few albums with African drummers, like this one with Solomon Ilori. So Art was listening to African music and African drumming in particular, as was Elvin. And you can hear it in their playing. And Tony was listening to them. I mean, Tony was, he loved Art Blakey. In fact, one of his last recordings was a tribute to Art Blakey.
That's right, on Blue Note. Let's listen to a little bit of that right now. Michael Veal here celebrating Tony Allen on International Jazz Day. You're featured prominently in the documentary called Finding Fela, directed by Alex Gibney. So is Questlove. One of the most memorable quotes from that film was when Questlove described Tony Allen like a Navy SEAL and able to play Afrobeat for 60 consecutive minutes. Would you make that comparison? Is that accurate?
Yes and no. I mean, look, I would maybe compare it to Navy SEALs in the sense that it was slick as hell. You know, he had a lot of slick, subtle stuff that he was putting up in there. All of his his little ornaments, his flams and drags and bangs and radimacues. And, you know, so he could really, a drummer would hear that stuff like a jazz drummer would hear and say, wow, that's some slick stuff he's playing there. You know what I mean? He was really a genius of drumming. Navy SEAL, I don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of those gigs, like at Fela's Shrine, they would get there. They wouldn't even, Fela himself wouldn't even show up till midnight. And the band's already been playing for a couple of hours, you know? So now Tony's already put 2 hours before Fela even arrives. And then when Fela comes, they're probably gonna play almost till dawn, you know? So you can't play in that like James Brown hard type of way for 6 or 7 hours. You can't do it. It's not humanly possible. So I would say Tony's style is lighter. You know, he's got a light touch. When it's time to thrust and push and pump, he can do it. But generally, he's laying in that thing, with riding on that bed of percussion around him. You know what I mean?
Still when he plays, right?
Very
he's,
centered.
He's almost length, like a statue.
His body, well, because it has to be, because his playing is so polyrhythmic. Whereas the funk players are leaning. Okay, you go to see a typical funk player, his body language is like, you know what I mean? He's got, whereas Tony is playing like this. You know, because the independent coordination is there. Now, most of the jazz drummers are playing in that centered way too, because they've mastered independent coordination. So they're all playing, you know, they've mastered independence of all four limbs. And so to play like that, you got to be centered. He wasn't a big guy. Someone like, say, Dennis Chambers, you know, who's like a burly type of guy. And so that's, Tony is a slight guy, and he had to learn how to get that power by interlocking with the music. See, if you interlock with the music properly, that generates power. The power, the structure generates power. You dig me? It's not like the power's all got to come from you, like you got to power your way. No. Once you interlock those parts in the right way, it's like physics. It starts generating energy. And that's the genius of African music.
Also, in your introduction to Tony Allen's autobiography, you talk about Tony Allen's evolution as a drummer and how he would actually become more refined and perhaps more elegant later on in the 70s, where he would become very sparse and this kind of thing. How do you see the totality of Tony Allen's evolution as a drummer?
Toward the end of his time with Fela, his patterns became a little more slimmed down and slick and minimalist. I'm thinking about songs like Shuffling and Smiling, Vagabonds in Power.
That's right around when he quit the band.
Right,
after, yeah.
Fear Not for Man, No Agreement, and Dog Eat Dog. Those are pretty minimalist patterns. Compared to something like Zombie or Alagbon Clothes or Question Jam Answer. Those are much, or Confusion, of course, is like the genius moment. those are much more polyrhythmic kinds of playing, you know. Then when he went out on his own, he would vary depending on the size of the ensemble. Like his first solo album, Away From Fela, was called No Discrimination. And that's a very underrated album. You know, that's like a combination of Afrobeat and the funk language of that time, late 70s. Almost sounds like it could be like a Larry Graham, Graham Central Station album. You know, when Larry Graham was at his height. It's got that kind of vibe on it. And then when he got with like some of the later projects, like the electronic stuff, then it was more more slimmed down and atmospheric, you know, because he had those people like Dr. L doing like a dub mix, you know, like a soundscape, electronic soundscape kind of thing on top. So then his job was just to anchor that.
I guess this is a good time to segue into the second portion of the conversation as Joe Armin Jones, the keyboardist from one of Tony Allen's last sessions, Rejoice, with the trumpet icon from South Africa, Hugh Masekela.
Tony Allen, Hugh Masekela.
I've never done a record like that where one of the members had already died and, you know, like Hugh wasn't alive by the time I was recording on the record. And then another, you know, another member died soon after. So it's kind of, yeah, in that way it is an odd one, but it was an honor, man. It was an honor.
Did you at least talk to Tony Allen before you came into the session?
Yeah. I spoke to him before, but not about the music actually. No, we came in and, yeah, he was just there in the session and we just spoke about the music then and kind of reasoned over the day, really.
What do you remember about that session, you know, in terms of, like, I mean, the whole record sounds amazing, like, but you really also, you know that it's a Tony and Hugh album. So your personality is very, I would say, muted to uplift those primary voices.
Yeah, I didn't really approach it in the same way that I would often approach things, maybe where I try and put more of myself into the record. I think because the record was kind of made, like it just needed parts, if that makes sense. Less like trying to, I don't know, solo all over it and just try and find parts that just complemented what was already there, really, which I like doing, you know, it's one of my favorite things to do anyway.
Joe Armin Jones, the keyboardist from Ezra Collective, also a leader in his own right, joins us to reflect on Tony Allen's career and was the keyboardist on one of Tony Allen's last sessions that was finally released last year, March 20th, Rejoice with Hugh Masekela. With that said, so the whole reason I personally wanted to do this podcast for International Jazz Day is getting everybody to rethink Tony Allen's legacy in a larger sense. You know, more in this Pan-African sense, I suppose. But thinking about him also more in along the lines of the jazz tradition. He's much closer to these artists like Max Roach and Art Blakey than we think. And Michael Veal, you make that case. There was this moment in New York City, I would say about 10 years ago, right around the time when Bill T. Jones kicked off Fela on Broadway. And I swear to God, there was like three or four different Afrobeats, like house Afrobeat bands in New York City, where Afrobeat itself was having a bit of a revival in this mysterious way. And that told me how ahead Tony Allen was for his times. So here are all these young 20-year-olds, and a lot of them, if not most of them, were these white guys trying to play like Tony Allen. Was that happening in the UK as well, Joe Armin Jones?
There's a few people who I play with, and I don't think they, I know when they were younger, like Fed Me From Ezra, and maybe Moses Boyd as well. When they were younger, they definitely listened to a lot of Tony Allen's playing and would have played along to the records. But it's just such a mad style to like, basically, I think as soon as you start trying to emulate it, you realize how hard it is to copy, and you end up creating your own thing, which is what Femi did, and is which is what Moses did. So if you hear Moses play Afrobeat, I can hear the difference between Moses and Femi playing Afrobeat, and I can hear the difference between them and Tony Allen playing Afrobeat, but you can hear who's the grandfather of a style for sure. It's just a very difficult thing to sort of copy. So people end up either not sounding very good or they do their own thing with it, you know?
But you got some guys here in New York, I can say for sure, who really devoted some serious time to studying and, you know, Tony's style, and they can really, you know, like, say, Greg Gonzalez, who played on in the Fela play, and now there's a band that developed out of that play. So he studied it pretty seriously. And then right. Kevin Roska, who plays with Ampi Balas. And then once again, I got to throw in the Ass Kicking Michael Veal and Aqua Ife. You know, throw that band in, you know. We don't only use Tony's patterns. You know, that's the point in my band. Like, you know, we don't only use those kinds of patterns. Tony, you know, even some of his patterns, he had numbers for them. Like, this is Afrobeat pattern number one. This is number two. This is number three.
Really?
Yeah, pattern number one was...
The first pattern of Afrobeat goes like this.
I didn't realize he numbered them.
Yeah, he numbered them. Another pattern was like...
Yeah, that's the one that everyone would strike for that's first, isn't it?
Yeah, everyone tried. Yeah. That's like colonial mentality. You know, yeah. Another pattern was, you know...
You know what it is, man? People get the patterns, and very rarely have I ever heard someone get the softness that he plays the patterns with.
That's right. That's right.
Like the volume of the drums and the way he mixes his own drums.
That's right.
That's a very hard thing to do.
Well, we were talking about that earlier. Yeah. You know how you got to touch those drums softly like a jazz drummer, make them sing.
Rest in power, Tony Allen and Hugh Masekela. You're listening to Coconut Jam from Rejoice. Tony Allen and Hugh Masekela finally released last year, March 20th, 2020, but recorded many years before then, back in 2010 in London on the World Circuit record label. Ezra Collective's Joe Armin Jones served on keys along with Kashi and Herbert on bass and Steve Williamson on tenor saxophone. And the session was produced by World Circuit's Nick Gold. Well, if you liked the show, I hope you did. This was an awesome one. Let us know if you're subscribing on our iTunes page. Write a comment there or on Stitcher, wherever else. We love your feedback. And you can also send us some notes just on social media. Use our handle at Checkout Jazz. That's on Twitter. The Checkout from WBGO also has a Facebook page, and you can find me there as well, at Simon Rentner. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. Thanks for checking us out.